Live from the capital of Raider Nation, Las Vegas, Nevada. It's Silver and Black Today, your daily dose of all things Las Vegas Raiders football. News, views, guests, and your phone calls are all part of the game plan. There's only one nation, and it listens here. Now your host, Scott Culbranson.
Welcome back. Hour number two, Silver and Black Today, here on your Raiders flagship station, Raider Nation Radio 920, brought to you by our good friends, Salmon Ash Injury Attorneys, 702-820-1234, because you deserve what's right. Scott Culbranson, Q Myers back with you here as we roll on with this show on a Wednesday. By the way, tomorrow's show, Thursday, Evan Grote from Just Pod Baby, Levi Edwards, digital reporter at Raiders.com, and our friend Dan Leberfeld from Jets Confidential will be with us. So another big show packed full, packed to the gills with Raider football and NFL news. What are you laughing at?
I thought you were about to say Dan Levitard, and I was like, I'm checking out of that show, brother. I don't want nothing to do with that one.
Not a fan, huh?
No.
Okay, I gotcha. No, Dan Leberfeld, who joined us in the preseason as we were previewing the Jets.
My bad.
That's okay, man. That's all right. Hey, we all got it. But we are now a guy we know we both like, even though Cody and I have never talked before. We're going out on the newsmaker line. Cody Benjamin from CBS Sports. You can follow him at Cody J. Benjamin on Twitter. Joins us, of course, writes about the NFL. He's an author and a movie buff, which maybe we'll get into a little bit later, because your next book, right, Cody's on movies?
Yes, absolutely. Thanks for, I don't expect people to mention that, but I appreciate it. And you know what, Scott, we haven't talked before, but I already like you too.
What about me, Cody? We go back like the Commodores.
Q was already assumed because we've been on radio spots together. I mean, I know he's got my back, so I just wanted to make sure.
There you go.
Good deal.
But the funny thing is, you know, Q's music guy, my wife and I are huge movie buffs, right? And we just movies to the gills. And so I'll just throw movie quotes in when we do rejoins, come back from breaks and stuff sometimes. And Q's like, what? What are you talking about?
Like, I have no idea.
What's going on here? And so I try to explain to him that it's a movie quote, and he's like, "Oh yeah, I never watched that one." So it'll be good. We'll have to do that with you. But congratulations! I know that book's coming out here soon. We'll talk about it at the end. But let's talk a little bit about football. And you know, you write clearly. You're a Philly guy originally. You wrote a piece up on CBS.com that caught my attention since we cover the Raiders here, where you said Carson Wentz might be the next Derek Carr, and that they have followed remarkably similar trajectories in their careers. Kind of explain to everybody, because everybody kind of knows what's going on with Carson Wentz this year and the struggles of the Eagles. But talk about that premise there about Carson Wentz and Derek Carr and similarities.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, depending on, you know, where you're coming from, whether you're a Derek Carr fan, a Raiders fan, Eagles fan, Carson Wentz fan, this could come off, you know, the comparison could be offensive to either side, depending on where you've, you know, come from. But I think it's not really a comparison of Carson Wentz and Derek Carr as far as their style of play, or even, you know, where they're going to end up by the end of their careers. It's more just like you said, that trajectory. Because when you're, you know, coming from the Philly perspective, you're trying to figure out, you know, what is going on with Carson Wentz, and really, the question right now isn't even, you know, is he bad right now, because the numbers are telling you that's obvious. The question is he salvageable? Is there an example in the NFL of a guy who's gone through such a stark reversal of fortunes and come back from it? And I know, you know, their situations are not apples to apples. No quarterback is. I mean, Derek Carr's supporting cast, his defense, everything about his situation, you know, there's a difference between what Carson Wentz has gone through. But if you look at it, and it's laid out in the article, you know, Derek Carr's trajectory, if you're looking for a comparable journey through the NFL, I mean, it is pretty astounding. Obviously, he didn't come in with the pedigree that Carson Wentz did, but these are both guys that they started all 16 games as rookies. They flashed within their first two, three seasons. They were legitimate MVP candidates. I don't know that, you know, outside of the Vegas, Oakland area, I don't know how many people around the league remember, like, how much Derek Carr was hyped up. I mean, he was ranked number 11 out of the top 100 players by his peers. I think it was going into 2016 or 17. I mean, he was hyped up, and then obviously he had a serious injury. Carson Wentz also had the serious injury right before their first, you know, big playoff runs. And then you can speak more on how much Derek Carr really dropped off, how much he may have lost the faith of fans when he kind of regressed a little bit. But that's what Carson Wentz is going through right now. And right now, you know, Derek Carr, you look over the last two seasons, he's been, you know, numbers-wise, he's been right around that top 10, right outside of it. And again, the wins haven't always been there, but he's been an example of a guy who came back from a regression. And again, that doesn't mean Carson Wentz is going to do that. More so just, here's an example of a guy that did it.
Cody, and looking at, you know, Derek Carr's contract, when he really first kind of got that contract, everyone looked at that money and said, well, hey, you've got to perform at this high level because you're getting paid a whole lot of money. Well, you look at Carson Wentz on the other side, he is right now getting a whole lot of money. And so how much more does that make his struggles kind of just, you know, be talked about more because he is getting that huge contract?
Well, it's everything right now because, you know, and it's crazy how much has changed because a year ago, 2 years ago, you know, right when he signed the deal, and that was only in 2019 when he signed the deal, you know, a lot of people thought that that's kind of a bargain, that it was a team-friendly deal because, you know, they built in some injury incentives. Obviously, you know, now we're not even talking about him as being an injury-prone guy. We're just talking about him as being an ineffective quarterback. And so that is everything right now, because if Carson Wentz wasn't on this mega deal, you know, if he was going into the last year of his deal, it was kind of a fifth-year option thing, you know, there might not be so much hesitancy on Doug Peterson's part, on the front office's part, to say, look, we got to see what we have in Jalen Hurts. You know, we might stick with Wentz beyond this year, but we have to, you know, something's got to change here. But the fact is, his contract, it's not completely untradeable. You can find ways around it, but it's going to cost, it's going to save the Eagles a whole lot of money, a whole lot of effort if they stick with him through at least 2021. And so, yeah, I think they want to see some sign before the season's over that this guy still has a little bit of franchise quarterback left in him.
Cody Benjamin from CBS Sports. You can follow him at Cody J. Benjamin on Twitter. And Cody, I think when you look at Carr and Wentz, you know, for me, watching Carr and covering him for the past 3 years, the difference I've seen between the last two seasons and this year when he's performed well, besides the fact that he's in the same offense for the first time in his third year in that offense, is confidence and just having a way about him, being a little more of an alpha leader, both visibly on the field and then vocally in press conferences and things like that. With Wentz, is it that too? Is the confidence gone, or is it because you like you said, the stats speak for themselves? You're not playing well, but do you see that too? Is that the consensus that confidence for Carson Wentz is gone?
It sure seems like it. I mean, he's not lacking in the personality to lead. I mean, the guy has always been described as a Type A personality. I mean, it's apparent in the way he conducts himself, the way he plays. But yeah, I think there is a lack of confidence right now, and there should be, because the system around him, this is one of those examples why, you know, there's a reason the Eagles are 3-7-1 right now, not just because Carson Wentz is bad, but because the whole system is failing right now. And so, you know, he does deserve to be blamed, but so does Doug Peterson. So does Howie Roseman, the general manager. I mean, the whole structure, it's like a self-perpetuating issue here, because the roster has been assembled with older, unreliable, often injured players. The coaching staff is, I mean, week in, week out. I mean, where is Miles Sanders being utilized? Why is Alshon Jeffrey, you know, an aging and rehabbing receiver being touted out there instead of your younger guys? And so it's a total package. And so because of that, I think there is a lack of confidence because all eyes are on the quarterback. He knows he's got to go out there. He knows they drafted a quarterback in the second round. Something's a little bit, you know, Nick Foles won a Super Bowl in the same city. There's so much pressure to perform, and yet I don't think he has the trust in that system right now. But something interesting that you mentioned about Derek Carr, which I think is kind of fascinating, the fact that this alpha personality, or more of an alpha personality, would emerge so far into his career. You know, you're talking year 6 or 7 to have that emerge is kind of fascinating.
So, Cody, when John Gruden returned to the Raiders, he broke that whole thing down. You know, traded, obviously, their best player in Khalil Mack, traded Amari Cooper, got some draft picks, got some weapons, you know. And we're talking about the Eagles and the fact that they don't really have any weapons. And if they do, they're aging, you know, or they're not being used correctly. Do the Eagles have a guy that they can move on from and maybe get some more capital and get some weapons around Carson Wentz so he has an opportunity to have a Derek Carr-type bounce back?
It's going to be tough to do that in free agency, you know, this coming offseason. The Eagles, if you look at the teams that are, you know, projected to be up against the cap, I mean, they're way over the cap. And so there's not much, unless you can find a trading partner for Carson Wentz, and then you're tearing the whole thing down. Right. You know, you're talking about guys like Alshon Jeffrey, DeSean Jackson. Those are guys that are almost givens to be cut as saving cap. Then you're looking at guys that you might not want to move on from, like a Brandon Graham or a Fletcher Cox. Those guys have high salaries. I mean, I wouldn't be shocked if Fletcher Cox was a guy that's dangled in trade talks if you're really trying to clear cap room. Derek Barnett, young pass rusher they have, that's not a guy you necessarily want to trade, but if you're desperate for the cap room, that could be one. And so those are the big names. And then Zach Ertz, another one, if there's a move to be made there. It really depends. Are they going to tear the whole thing down? And really, it depends who's making these decisions. Is Howie Roseman given you know, a little bit more of a leash here? And if that's the case, he might be thinking short-term to try and save his own job. And so that's why I think, really, the Eagles have some really big-picture questions regardless of how they finish the season.
Yeah, real interesting. I mean, some of the parallels there, too, as a great question by Q there, because, yeah, the Eagles need to find a way to get bodies in there to improve the cast around Carson Wentz to give him the best opportunity to succeed. And that's where Derek Carr was, too, and they were able to do it. And they were able to do it because they had to, right? They couldn't go out and get a quarterback because you needed everything else. And you were already paying a guy. So it'll be interesting to see how it all works out. Cody, okay, before we let you go, we're gonna talk movies for a second here. Now, you have a new book coming. You have a new book coming out. What about the movies? Exploring cinema's place in a world full of screens, streams, and smartphones. Fascinating book, because for me, I talked about my wife and I, but we love it. This whole shutdown and coronavirus thing has killed us, because our kids, we are a movie going family. We go to the movies. Your book kind of explores how that's changing, right?
Yes, absolutely. So this is a funny story. We actually, so a friend and I from college both, you know, went to the same journalism school. And so, you know, we're sports guys, but we also have a passion for movie going, like you said. And we spent almost a year talking to theater owners, you know, people that have worked in studios, just asking questions about, you know, do movie theaters actually have a future? We got all this done. We actually finished that book. And this was in March, early March. Oh. And then a few weeks later, the whole country shuts down. All the theaters have closed their doors. And so now I'm actually planning to update that, re-release it in 2021, basically switching it to just argue why we do need the movie theaters, why they are so important as a communal function. You know, anyone can find any movie wherever they want, you know, at home, on their phone. But there's something special about movie going. And so I know that's way off of the sports track, but it is a passion that, you know, we love going to the movies too, and I think that movie theaters are so much more than I think a lot of people give them credit for. And so, yeah, I'd love to get you guys, you know, when that's wrapped up, get you, if you're moviegoers, love to get you the book. We can, if you want to talk about it, we can do that.
Yeah.
I think it's just a fascinating thing, you know, just to look at whether they have a future now that the pandemic has happened, and why we should care that they do.
Yeah, and you know what, Cody? There is some parallels to sports, though, because, yeah, we can watch sports on TV and all that, but the, you know, especially for Raider fans who are so passionate, for them to go to a game, number one, and if they can't go to a game, go to a local sports bar or a club meeting or something where they're all watching the game together. It's a different feel, and movies are that way as well. And I know for me, like, if I had FU money and I could check out right now, I always told my wife I'd move to some small rural town and I'd have a one screen movie theater, and that's what I would do all day.
we gotta get an interview with you in this book then, because that's perfect. I think, no, you're absolutely right. I mean, and there's also something, initially the book was more about kind of the, you know, against the streaming and smartphones. So it's not saying that watching movies that way is bad. It's just that, just like you said, you know, you can watch a football game at home. That's great. You can also go watch a football game at a stadium. That just has a different experience, and right. That's what it's all about, the experience there. So, yeah, it's an interesting time with so many theaters being closed, but I think that there is actually more proof than people realize that they do have a future. So, yeah, would love to, if you're interested, have another discussion about that.
Absolutely. Cody Benjamin, CBS Sports. Follow him at Cody J. Benjamin on Twitter. Thanks, man. We appreciate you.
Hey, thanks for having me.
All right. There you go. Cody Benjamin. Good stuff.
I didn't know that. I know Cody for a long time. I didn't know he was a big movie buff, though.
Yeah, it's interesting. When you do background on guests, sometimes you can go deeper, sometimes you don't. And it popped up, and I went to his website, and then I saw, oh, he's got a book about movies, right? So I thought, and the whole movie theater chain thing, because I don't think there's going to be many left after all this, unfortunately. And so it just changes things in completely. So very, very interesting. But nonetheless, it's time for a break. When we come back, we're going to roll on. We also have Connor Hughes to talk Jets coming up next. We also have caller Raider Dave. Stay on the line. We'll get to you right after the break. You're here with Q and Scott on Silver and Black today on Raider Nation Radio.
The autumn wind is a raider, and when it blows, it comes from the Las Vegas desert. Back to Silver and Black today here on Raider Nation Radio 920 AM.
Back here, Silver and Black today, Raider Nation Radio. Your boy Q Myers, Scott Colbranson, Dynamite, Damon Cotton. So, Q, you know Damon. Damon, get that microphone on there for a second.
He's a prison guard.
I love that tweet yesterday. Somebody said, because I said, you looked like you came out of county with the shirt.
Yeah.
And somebody said, yeah, county's different than the penitentiary. I just thought, well, what does that mean? But
I mean, it's a good thing not to know the difference. You know what I mean? It just means that you haven't experienced either one of them, and that's a good thing.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. By the way, Damon is also, you know, he does, I think we talked about it before, he does professional wrestling.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Is it real wrestling or fake wrestling?
Yo, man, don't use that F word, man. What you mean?
I mean, look, there's a difference. There's real wrestling and there's fake wrestling.
It's not Greco-Roman.
Right? It ain't fake either.
Yeah, it's not Greco-Roman. I'll put it that way. So, Damon, when he comes into the ring, his name is Dynamite Damon.
Okay.
So
cool.
He's now Dynamite.
I say that because I worked with a dude, and he doesn't work with me right now, but he was a professional wrestler as well, and his name was Chris, but his name was like Angel when he was a wrestler, and he said that he was always used to be, oh man, I hate the term, I can't remember the term that he used.
Was he a jobber?
Either way.
Was it what?
A what?
Was he a jobber?
Yes.
A jobber.
Yes. What's that mean?
You're doing the job, you know, like you're going in and you know that you're losing, you know, yeah, your job is to just make the other guy look good. You're doing the job.
Okay. Yes. That's exactly what he was. He was the jobber. So let me ask you this. Are you the jobber?
I'm an up-and-coming star. I'm not doing jobs for anybody, actually.
I heard that. Hey, man, if you don't believe it, nobody else will. I heard that, man.
This is Silver and Black today. Scott Colbranson, IMQ's jobber.
I'm like, hey, man, I'm like Damon, man. I'm like, hey, I'm not being a jobber for nobody.
No, of course not. Of course not. But that's what I just thought it was funny because he's got this personality and he's on local TV here, man. They do matches now because of the recent rollback and shutdown stuff. They're not, but they're on local TV, and I keep wanting to do to. I'm like, dude, are you guys on? You kind of see it on YouTube because I haven't seen them yet. They don't want it on YouTube because they want to handle it all and all that kind of stuff. I get it. It's like TV.
They want to make that bread.
Exactly. But we definitely.
Well, hey, next time I come to Vegas, man, let me be a ring announcer, man. I've done that before.
Yeah, there you go.
I have. I did it for WWE in Fresno one time. It came to the Save Mart Center, and I was the guy, and I introduced it, and I had to hype up the crowd. It was awesome.
That's awesome. Okay, we're going to go. We've got our guest coming up here in just a minute, Connor Hughes. But first, Raider Dave in Denver joins us. He was not happy with Cody's comparison, at least in loose terms, of Carson Wentz and Derek Carr. Go ahead.
not at all. I think the guy must be a great dude. I love taking my family to movies, too. I'm sure he's a good family guy, and I guess Q knows him and had to play politics, but man, Q, you got to call BS when you see it. Not the only thing in comparison between Carr and Wentz is Aguilar. You know, Carr has not even missed but one regular season game his entire career. Carr never played on a Super Bowl team, but Wentz did, and he choked. Mm-hmm. You know, that just shows how backwards, just another reason how backwards that division is. They can't make a good decision to keep my man out of Tucson, Nick Foles, after he wins a Super Bowl. You think if the Raiders had both those quarterbacks, the Raiders wouldn't have kept a Super Bowl winner? You're darn right they would have. I don't see any comparison with Wentz. That Carr is a way better quarterback, had a better career, and it's not even close with these kind of comparisons. So I hope he continues to write about movies or any other stuff that doesn't have a whole lot of fact in it. Maybe, you know, go into political writing so more people would read that BS. I'm sorry. Dang. It ain't happening with me, man. No way.
Well, I'll, to be fair to Cody now, Dave, and we know how, we know how much you know how much we love you, he doesn't compare them directly. His point was really that Carson Wentz could follow the same trajectory as far as, hey, kind of you get hurt, you lose your confidence, you don't play as well as you could. You have all the abilities, all the skill set, which we all have said Derek Carr's always had. And then he comes back this year and is playing great football, right? And so
when did Carr lose his confidence?
After he injured himself in 2016.
I don't think he lost his confidence at all.
He lost it in his legs.
He got happy feet.
Same thing. He lost it in his legs again. For sure.
Yeah. Not necessarily confidence overall, but like
not
Hugh
arm
says,
talent, but legs.
Yeah, legs and kind of moving around and all that kind of stuff. And because to me, this year, you look at Derek Carr, even versus last year, just so much different, so much more active and able to get out and do what he needs to do. And his leadership ability, too, I think, I mean, he's always been a good leader, but I think that he's taken it to a next level, which is what you have to do if you want to get that team to perform and be a championship team. And Derek Carr's done that.
Well, it's a team deal, and yep. I think it's all baby steps, and we're seeing it. You know, they came a couple plays away from making the playoffs last year. I picked them 11-5. I didn't expect what happened to the Falcons, you know, with the Falcons like a lot of people did, but there was no way after losing that game to Kansas City in the last, you know, few seconds because Ingold really didn't make the catches and keep the clock rolling. There's no way they were going to go, winning out the rest of the season. There was one loss that was going to come somewhere, and I think we all ought to be a little bit happy it was against a team that's not going to matter much down the road versus, you know, an AFC opponent or whatever. But yeah. I think this is a jump start, and I'm looking forward to this thing really getting on a good roll. We're going to get good players back, and it's all about health and this offensive line. They're not going to go any further than this offensive line could take them, and that's always been the case with this team the entire career of Derek Carr.
Yeah, Dave, great call again, man. We appreciate you. Thanks again for
Scott, real quick, yeah. I think, you know, again, in Cody's, and you kind of touched on it as well, I don't think that Cody was comparing the two. I think he was basically hoping that Carson Wentz can end up being more like Derek Carr, to be 100% honest with you.
Right. It was Derek Carr as the example of how you climb back out of it, so to speak.
Yeah,
for Carson Wentz. All right, we are now going back right on the Newsmaker line and bringing in our next guest to talk New York Jets. That is Connor Hughes from The Athletic. Connor_J_Hughes on Twitter if you want to follow him. And Connor, here we are, the Raiders coming off just a terrible game. It was a game somewhat reminiscent of their loss to the Jets last year, but they come in to play a Jets team that is winless and just sort of kind of lost at sea. And I read a lot of your stuff today. I watched some of your videos. Love the videos, by the way, up on The Athletic when you're talking Jets. But what does this team do? Where is it now? What does it need to do just to start to get the ship righted so that it can get back to being a winning organization?
I don't know if that's going to be accomplished this year, man, completely honest with you. I mean, this team's got some issues. I mean, they don't really have an identity. They can't throw the ball. They can't run the ball. They're not overly great at run or pass blocking. Defensively, they stop the run pretty well, but aside from that, they can't stop anyone to covers. Aside from Quinton Williams, they don't really have anyone who can rush the passer. So, you're talking about a team that's 0-11, a team that is steamrolling toward the top pick in the draft, and there's a reason why they are this bad. And what they do well, honestly, man, I think the only thing they do well is that they don't do anything well.
What was the big to-do about the offensive coordinator not calling the plays and Adam Gase basically saying he wasn't calling the plays, but yet, you know, everyone there in the media, including probably yourself, saw that he was calling the plays? What all ended up coming out with that?
Yeah, so basically what it is there's both Dow Loggins, the Jets offensive coordinator, and Adam Gase, team's head coach. They both call plays throughout the game. And what the Jets have done is they've taken every situation that is available in a football game. So pass plays, run plays, shotgun, you know, plays out of the shotgun, plays from under center, red zone, two-minute drill, things like those situations. And they have split the play calling of those situations up between Dow and Adam Gase. And so if the Jets are going to run the ball, one of those guys is going to call the run plays. If they're going to throw the ball, someone else is going to call those plays. If they're in the red zone, one of the guys is going to be called. That's kind of what they're doing. That seems to me like making a situation that is already complicated significantly more complicated. I don't know how you can find any semblance of rhythm when you're doing things that way because, I mean, look, football is a chess match, right? I mean, you're mm-hmm. running one play to set up the next, and the Jets doing it that way doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me, but, I mean, at this point, they're 0-11. Does anything really matter when your eyes are on Trevor Lawrence and the number one pick?
Yeah, Connor, to me, it's just so bizarre. It's almost like a bunch of school kids on the playground and everybody wants a piece of responsibility, so they start divvying it up. It's just so weird. And, you know, we're not a fanboy show here. We're not trying to pour on and be pro Raiders and anti Jets. It just speaks to me to going back to that press conference that introduced Adam Gase as head coach. Nobody seemed to really understand what the organization was doing and why they thought that he would be a good choice to come in there. When you look at that decision and what it's brought to the Jets in the time since Adam Gase has been there, and then you go into the front office, how does this front office start to right itself? How does the ownership, I mean, do they just need to clean house completely and start over?
No, so it's weird because things have changed so dramatically since this team hired Adam Gase. And what I mean by that is, you know, they had Christopher Johnson, who's filling in for Woody Johnson as the team's CEO, and they had Mike Maccagnan as the general manager. Mike Maccagnan had just drafted Sam Darnold, who at the time when the Jets hired Adam Gase, they believed that Sam Darnold was going to be the team's franchise quarterback. So Christopher Johnson was not willing to let Mike Maccagnan go at the time he was letting Todd Bowles go because he thought, you know, all right, he got me my franchise quarterback. He deserves to see this thing through. Mike Maccagnan, Christopher Johnson, they meet with all these coaches. They had their reservations about Mike McCarthy because, you know, they didn't like the way the relationship deteriorated between he and Aaron Rodgers. When it came to Matt Rhule, he was somebody that the Jets really, really liked. But with Matt Rhule, they didn't really necessarily like the coaching staff he was going to put together because he was filled with a bunch of college coaches and they wanted some pro experience on there. Cliff Kingsbury was another guy that they were interested in and flirting with. But with Cliff Kingsbury, he chose the Arizona Cardinals because he had an opportunity, obviously, to get Kyler Murray and pick his quarterback and all that. So the Jets settled on Adam Gase. About 3 months into that thing, Christopher Johnson, spending time in the facility, realizes, holy cow, my general manager and my head coach are not seeing eye to eye. My general manager is making decisions that I don't agree with, decides to let Mike Maccagnan go. After, obviously, Mike Maccagnan went through free agency and spent like $100 million and then ran the NFL draft. It was a botched situation. It's a situation that Christopher Johnson admitted he has a mistake with. The one positive of that, though, is that it did land the Jets Joe Douglas as their general manager. You know, a guy who comes from the Ozzie Newsome school of team building, who spent time with the Chicago Bears and was a member of the Philadelphia Eagles when they won their Super Bowl in 2017. The Jets were able to get him in this organization, and this is now Joe Douglas's show. Joe Douglas is somebody who has Christopher Johnson's full trust, Christopher Johnson's full backing. Christopher Johnson's taken a back seat. When Woody Johnson comes back from overseas, he will remain in the back seat. It's Joe Douglas's job, and it's Joe Douglas who is building the draft. It's Joe Douglas who's running free agency. It's Joe Douglas who will pick this team's head coach when Adam Gase is fired after the year. And that's the one thing to say, like, okay, there is some stability here because Joe Douglas is almost like the anti-Jets hire. You know, the Jets are always the team that goes out there and gets the sexy signing and the big name guy and does the big free agent signing, gives a boatload of money, you know, trades for Tim Tebow. You know, that's the Jets move. That's very not Joe Douglas. Joe Douglas is built through the draft. Never spend more than what you believe his player is worth. I mean, I remember when the Jets hired Joe Douglas, talking to people around the league who couldn't believe Joe Douglas agreed to come work for the Jets. So this is, it's ugly right now. It looks very ugly right now, but at least the Jets finally do have somebody calling the shots and building this thing that has a pretty good reputation around the league and not just within circles here in New York.
What has been your thoughts and overall feelings of one of those young dudes on the roster right now, Denzel Mims, the second round wide receiver out of Baylor? I know he didn't start the season. He was banged up, but he's playing now.
Yeah, he looks good, man. I mean, you expand. He missed, obviously, all of training camp, all of OTAs. You know, he's playing for a pretty questionable offensive play callers and Adam Gase, I guess, now, and Dell Loggins, because you got to loop those guys both in together, obviously, on a team that's winless. If you were to expand his statistics throughout a 16-game season, basically what he's done since he's been active in over 16 games, he's on pace for like 55 grabs and 908 yards. You know, for a second-round pick, playing basically with a horrible quarterback situation, bad play calling, and not having an offseason or training camp, those are pretty good numbers. You know, he's a big physical guy. He's aggressive. He's extremely confident in himself whenever he steps on the field. He's somebody who believes that he is the best player on the field. So I think he's a guy, I don't know if he's ever going to be a true number one, but he's going to be a perfect Robin when the Jets eventually find themselves a Batman. And he's a guy who's big, physical, can make 50-50 catches, can stretch the field. He does a lot of good things, and I think you'll see that on Sunday.
Connor Hughes from The Athletic NFL covers the Jets. You can follow him at Twitter, @Connor_J_Hughes. And Connor, we look at the Sam Darnold situation. You think that they are going to move on no matter what? I mean, of course, everybody talks about the tanking for Trevor and the fact that the Jets, unless something crazy happens, probably going to have that number one pick and use it on Trevor Lawrence. But Sam Darnold just struggles, doesn't seem to really put it together. The offense seems to look better under Joe Flacco, which surprises the heck out of me. But is this the combination of the player, the system, and the situation?
Yeah, it's the combination. I mean, the Jets have failed Sam Darnold. You know, they've never built a competent offensive line in front of him in his 3 years here. They've never given him a stable of receivers in his 3 years here. He's had questionable offensive play calling, whether it was Jeremy Bates and then Adam Gase. I mean, you're supposed to take a young quarterback and build a team around him. I mean, you guys are with the Raiders, right? So, I mean, just look at what they did with Dave Carr in his second and third years. You know, I know that team ended up winning, what was it, like 11 or 12 games before Carr went down with that injury, and kind of the playoffs obviously got away from you guys a little bit because Carr was out. But you build and you surround your young quarterback with talent, and the Jets have never done that. And I think you're seeing the result of a quarterback in Sam Darnold that's kind of a little bit broken right now. You know, he's a guy that sees pressure when it's not necessarily there. He's forcing balls into coverage when it shouldn't be there. He's trying to play hero ball, which obviously you never want your quarterback to do when the situation doesn't dictate it. So I think the Jets have some problems. I think the Jets have some issues. I think that a lot of the issues at quarterback are their own doing. But at this point, if this team's finishing with the number one or number two pick in the draft, which is what they're going to have unless they finish the year 3-2, which is not happening. And if you watch any minute of Jets football, you realize this team is not winning three of the final five games this year. If they finish number one, they're going to take Trevor Lawrence. If they finish number two, they're going to take Fields from Ohio State, and they're going to kind of start this rebuild again over with a new quarterback on his rookie contract.
You mentioned earlier about the defense, and obviously up front, Quinnen Williams is a heck of a player. He's doing his thing, but the secondary is not really playing that well. But how do they play kind of as a whole under Greg Williams? Because I know most defensive players like to play for Greg Williams.
The defense as a whole is struggling, man. Like you said, there's Quinnen Williams, and Quinnen Williams is having a hell of a year. I mean, I think it's seven tackles, sack and a half last week, a forced fumble, and two pass breakups. I mean, he's got five sacks on the year. Really, really starting to come into his own and playing aggressive and not thinking too much, just doing letting his athleticism and playmaking ability shine. I mean, he is certainly one of the bright spots. But aside from him, I mean, the Jets' secondary is so banged up. You know, they're down to Lamar Jackson and Bryce Hall starting at the corner positions. Jackson's an undrafted free agent. Bryce Hall was a fifth-round pick. You know, in the secondary, they got Ashton Davis and Marcus May, two guys they like, but neither of those guys at this point in their career are real difference makers. You know, Marcus May is a hell of a center fielder. But Ashton Davis, as a rookie, still doesn't have necessarily the eye talent to make a difference. You know, he just needs time to kind of develop and take his time. And without Jamal Adams, they're missing something there. And then at the linebacker position, they've got two guys that try really hard, Neville Hewitt and Harvey Lange at the inside. But again, it's not C.J. Mosley. It's not Patrick Willis. You know, it's not any of these true game-changing players. So the defense is going to put forth an effort. The defense is going to go 100 miles per hour every play. The defense's biggest issue is that they just don't have the talent to really make a difference.
You mentioned Marcus May. I wanted to ask you real quick about him. Is he long for the Jets, or do you think he'll be similar to Jamal Adams and be out of there soon?
No, the Jets do have some interest in bringing him back. I mean, it's just going to come down to money. You know, the way that Joe Douglas occupies this is he looks at his players, unrestricted, restricted, all those kind of free agents. He looks at them and basically says, okay, what do they do and what is their worth? You know, what is, how much money are they going to be worth? And when free agency comes, he's going to make a contract offer to them that is what he believes is fair. If some other team is willing to blow that player out of the water with a contract value that is what Joe Douglas deems to be out of market value, then he's going to let that player walk. It's why he let Robbie Anderson go. You know, but at the same time, he was able to lock in and bring back Jordan Jenkins, Brian Poole, a slew of other players on 1 and 2 year deals that were not over market value, what they believed those guys were worth, which is very different than what John Idzik, Mike Tannenbaum, and Mikey Tagnon had done in their years running the show. So when free agency comes and this season's over, the Jets are going to try to bring Marcus May back. It's just a matter of if he will be priced out of their competition by some other team.
There you go. Connor Hughes, Athletic, NFL, covers the Jets. Connor, thanks, man. We appreciate all your time today.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks so much for having me on. I appreciate it.
All right, be safe out there. Okay, there you go. Connor Hughes. Interesting. I love
Marcus May is a guy that I'd definitely be interested in he hits the free agent market. I'll tell you that. He's a heck of a player.
Yeah, he's going to be in demand for sure. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we will talk with Vinny Bonsignor to close out the show. We'll talk about that long injury list for the Raiders, and we'll try to sneak a call in. We got a couple of folks on hold. We'll get to you when we come back. Fabian, El Paso Raider, we'll get to you right after the break here on Silver and Black Today on Raider Nation Radio.
Welcome back to Silver and Black Today. Here's Scott Gulbranson and Q Myers.
Welcome back. Hello. Welcome back, Silver and Black Today.
What are you doing?
I was waiting for Dynamite to turn on my microphone.
Oh, I just watched a video. Not actually, it was just like a GIF or a GIF or whatever they call it.
You found one of him?
Dana. No. Dana hit us up on Twitter and said, Scott and Q, you got to check this out. And it was actually a video on Twitch. But then when I went to watch it, they asked me for $5. And I'm sorry, D-Mon, I can't pay the $5, man.
Yeah, he told me that. That's where they broadcast their stuff on Twitch.
Yeah, well, he got to give me a backstage pass or something, and I'll definitely check him out. But I did see the little it was a suplex, or so it says huge electric chair into a German suplex by Demond the Boss on Nick Bugatti. So
that used to be your stage name, right? The Boss. Well, he's got to put it.
No, that was just that was just what I made my Twitter as. That's been my Twitter since 2011, Demond the Boss. So nothing. That's just.
But there's a suplex or something he saw a GIF of.
Yeah, that's the German suplex. I put him in the electric chair, popped him up.
Into a German. Hey, man, I got your back. I see it. I got you. Then he said, oh, yeah, the promotion's showing me off. They say I'm up next. So, hey, man, this dude, he's going to be our bodyguard, man. We're going to hire you for to be our bodyguard if we ever need to go out or something. You know what I mean?
I just want to have us walk him into the ring one day.
Yeah, that's cool. I think you could be like the manager type, and I'll just be the hype man. It'll fit our roles much better.
Cut me, Mick. No. Anyway, okay, we're going to get to a couple quick callers here before we go out to Vinny, who's on the road again. On the road again? Okay, it is Fabian, our good friend Fabian. He is on the line. You're with Q and Scott. What's up, Fabian?
Hey, there's a difference between wrestling and wrestling.
Yes.
They wrestle in Texas. I know all about wrestling. They wrestle people. They wrestle cattle. They wrestle all kind of things in Texas.
Yeah. So, Sunday.
Sunday, Sunday.
Sunday. I think it's going to be the Josh Jacobs show. But once you get rolling, and that's when Waller, my friend, my buddy, my pal, little guy, a little rascal, he comes out, and it'll be his day to shine.
Yeah, it's funny. Hunter is kind of heating up now, right? At least last week.
He was the leading receiver.
Yeah, yeah. And although I think if you get Josh Jacobs rolling – and again, Fabian, thanks for the call, man. We appreciate you as always. If you get Josh Jacobs rolling, you got to get Waller more than four targets on the day, Q.
Yeah, you do. But if you get Josh Jacobs rolling, you ought to attempt to get Devontae Booker rolling as well.
I
because
agree.
If Jacobs is rolling, that means that the run game is cooking. And if the run game is cooking, then they can do anything they want in the passing game. But they've got to establish those guys. And I'd like to see a heavy dose of both of them, to be 100% honest with you.
Yeah, and not only that, but then you also get them to the point where you can get Josh Jacobs some rest if he's nursing that ankle. Because he'll go. He's mm-hmm. a gamer. But if you can get him out of there early because you've built up a nice lead and you are running the ball downhill, that would be good too. Okay, one last quick call. Got about a minute before we got to get out to Vinny. It's El Paso Raider. El Paso Raider, what's going on today, buddy?
Hey, what's going on, fellas? First of all, man, hope y'all had a great Thanksgiving.
Thank you, man.
And enjoy family. Has anybody seen the Las Vegas Raiders offense anywhere? Because from what I understand, they went AWOL this past weekend.
Yeah.
The defense was playing tough. You know, they kept us in games and all that. But, I mean, a championship team, caliber team, should not have this type of loss, in my opinion. And this goes all the way from the top, from John Gruden. This team was unprepared, and we cannot have this type of losses. I mean, it's not just a bad loss. We got manhandled. We got dragged on the ground, you know, on the grass with these guys. And we can't have that. If we want to be a championship team, if we want to leave the old Raiders of old in the past, we need to change this. This needs to change. Now it starts this weekend.
Yeah. El Paso Raider, great call, man. Yeah, I agree. And I think we've been saying that all week, which is it was a butt whooping. It's done with. And now your margin of error has slimmed significantly. So you got to win 4 or 5 probably, get to 10. And, well, you do mm-hmm. to get to 10 and to really be in that playoff hunt with what's going on in the AFC unless something drastic happens between now and then. So great call. Thanks, El Paso Raider. We appreciate you, man. All right, now we're going out to West Sunset Road. The Bank Gambit, a kind of cool speakeasy bar restaurant where Vinny Bonsignor is set up on camp. He's ordering drinks for Q. Q won't be able to pick him up, but he's going to order them anyway.
Man,
Vinny, hey, listen, we talked. Gruden was in a good mood today. He was almost like a little bit of a stand-up comedian with some jokes and getting Raider Nation all fired up. But he was right. When he said, oh, you'll see the list later, the injury list, it's long. I thought that was just coach speak like they usually do, but it is indeed long.
It is very long. And by the way, Q knows what the password is here. So he's always welcome.
Absolutely.
But yes, there's no doubt that my eyes get tired just looking at this list. And I'm not quite sure who practiced today for the Raiders and who didn't. You could probably count more of the guys that did practice than didn't, or vice versa. It was just, I mean, this is incredible when you're talking about Jonathan Abram. And they're key players, without a doubt. Jonathan Abram, Nelson Aguilar, Damon Arnett, Malik Collins, who's going to be going on to the injured reserve list, Denzel Good, Rodney Hudson, Maurice Hurst, Gabe Jackson, Josh Jacobs, Nick Kukowski, you know, so it's like on and on and on, and that's just the guys that didn't participate. There's a whole bunch of them that were also limited as well, so or a handful of them that were limited as well. So no doubt about it, the Raiders are banged up, both physically and probably a little mentally and psychologically after the beatdown they took on Sunday against the Atlanta Falcons. But no excuses, got to forge ahead. Big game against the Jets coming up, and they can't use any of this as an excuse. They need to go to New York and take care of business and get this thing back on track.
I know Trent Brown's not going to be available for this week's game against the Jets, but do you kind of feel like he may be in line to play for the final four games, the final quarter of the season for the Raiders?
We'll always keep this in mind about Trent Brown. The paychecks end, December 3rd, unless they go to the playoffs? Or excuse me, January 3rd, unless they go to the playoffs. So I would think that he's probably looking at the fact that after that game, the last game of the season, the guaranteed money of his contract is out the window, paid up in full. So if he wants to start making money or, you know, at least create a market for himself or recreate a market for himself, he needs to get back out on the football field and start playing some football. Because if he wants to move on from here, whether it's here in Las Vegas, which I doubt very seriously, or someplace else, he needs to start showing some people that he's ready to get out there and play some football in order to keep making some money.
Vinny, you know, you talk about that and Brent and Trent Brown, and obviously most of us believe that he won't be part of the plans next year for that reason. But you look at the NFL overall with the salary cap going down, teams that have cash and draft capital are going to be in a really good position. Might there be other Raiders? I mean, depending what happens now, if they make the playoffs and they can make a run it can change things. But if they don't, or if something drastic happens, do you see the Raiders maybe making some surprise moves as we get into that offseason? I know it's early, but we're talking about salary cap. We're talking about all that now as well.
Surprise moves in terms of cutting people and things
like
that?
Correct.
Yeah, I would imagine that everyone's going to have to take a hard look at the bottom line and try to figure out where they can create some wiggle room for themselves in terms of actual cash money. It's one thing to have, you know, the space under the salary cap, which the Raiders are in line to have. You're also talking about the reality of the actual money part of it. Mm-hmm. And so I would think that there's a lot of players right now across the NFL, some of these veteran guys that are making, a significant number, let's put it that way, or one that might catch an eye where, a general manager or coach or an owner says, can we do as good or close to for a fraction of that cost? And if the answer is yes, you're going to see a lot of guys flood the market, this offseason, because there is so much uncertainty in terms of the actual money that guys are going to be willing to spend.
And Vinny, I bring that up, and Q jump in on this too, because I bring that up because Q mentioned earlier, hey, you know, the Raiders, those guys in the room, they got to get together and play for the shield on the side of the helmet, play for your teammates and all that. But knowing what's coming in the future as well, is if you want to remain a Raider and you want to stay in Las Vegas and you want to be part of the franchise, you got to kind of show these last 5 weeks that you're worth that investment. Some is going to be math. I get it. Some guys will probably be gone just because you could, like you said, you can upgrade or get a player of the same talent for less money. But there's a little bit of that, hey, do you want to be here? Do you want to be part of what they're building?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I think for the most part, that answer is yes across the board. I think, you know, I haven't really question anybody's effort or anything like that. Was there a drop maybe in focus on Sunday and maybe the week prior to it? Yeah, it sounds like there was, there's two ways of looking at it. One, it's inexcusable, which you're, as a professional athlete, you need to put your nose to the grindstone day in and day out, and there's a professionalism about that. But also, this is a young team. There's been so much that these guys are dealing with this year in terms of, you don't know who's practicing, as we saw today, COVID-19, all the rules and regulations, whether it's there at the facility or when you go home. This has been a mental challenge throughout the season from beyond the start of the season, and it just carries over. So you got to figure that at some point, especially with a young team, there's a little bit of a mental break point where, you know, not everyone is in it as much as they should be. So I kind of think that that's what happened a little bit to a young team last week leading up to the Falcons game. Plus, they're coming off an emotional loss to the Chiefs. Now they got to get ready for a quote-unquote 3-7, Falcons team. So it was ripe for some sort of a letdown. The key now is, did they get the wake-up call? Did that alarm clock go off loudly in terms of the loss, the butt-whooping, what Derek Carr had to say, what Alec Ingold had to say about what went wrong the week prior? And has that message been heeded? And are they going to be able to get it back, get that mojo back, that passion, that commitment back in time to go win 5 games or at least go 4-1 to put themselves in a really good position to make the playoffs. That's the question that remains to be seen, and we're going to get a pretty good idea of a Sunday night or Sunday in New York.
We were talking about players that, you know, could be on the bubble, might not be back with the Raiders next season. How big of a swing and miss was Marcus Mariota?
Well, I mean, here's the thing. When you look at your backup quarterback, you don't want your backup quarterback to play. The only reason we haven't seen Marcus Mariota is because Derek Carr has been, injury-free, and that's a good thing, and that's how you want it to be. So as far as Marcus Mariota, this is how I've always answered all these questions because I get a lot of these. All right, so what happens, knock on wood, next week if Derek Carr were to go down for a month? Don't you want to have a guy like Marcus Mariota right there for you to be able to tap into to cover that month? Of course you do. So the money that you're paying him is only going to be it's valued in just the peace of mind that he creates. And then if it comes to it, the fact that he could go out there as a veteran NFL quarterback and hold down the fort. Yeah. But it's okay if he doesn't play, because that means Derek Carr has gone wire to wire, and that's what you want more than anything. It's one of those things where you don't know what it's worth until you have to tap into it. And if you don't have it, if you don't have that available to tap into, then you're going, why didn't we do better at the backup quarterback position? Why didn't we just invest a little bit of extra money that we can use, you know, on an emergency basis? So that's how I look at it.
All right, there you go. Vinny, have a good show, man.
All right, guys, take care.
All right, Q, all right, have a good night, Q.
All right, man, you too. Appreciate you.
All right, for Q Myers, for DeMond Cotton, I am Scott Gilbranson. Talk to you same time tomorrow, 2 to 4 p.m., Silver and Black Today, only on Raider Nation Radio. Listen.